Welcome to D&D, the Dinner Party Role Playing Podcast. I'm your host and Dungeon Master James Gressel. With me today are fun people, Beth and Mike. Say hi, fun people.
Hello.
Hello.
Do you guys ever have it where you try to open your mouth all the way and it doesn't, and you can't because your bones won't let you?
Like lockjaw?
Yeah. Do you guys have lockjaw?
You need to eat some citrus, Beth.
Is that my problem?
Yeah.
Sometimes when I'm driving, you were like, say hi, fun people. And I was like, because I couldn't open my mouth.
I get a click sometimes where I have, so what is it? It's like a TMJ or whatever. Is that what it is? Where you have like jaw pain?
Too many jaws.
Is that what that is?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely have that.
Usually for me, it's when I chew a bunch and then all of a sudden now my jaw is tired and then I don't want to open it up. But I've never had it stuck.
It's weird. It's bad. I don't like it.
Yeah,
it's probably what will take me out.
That's it. There's going to be a situation where you need to open your mouth, life and death situation. You can't.
I can't.
I guess that's most days. You need to open your mouth to keep yourself alive.
Mm-hmm. Although if I am taken by a collection of humans who would like to roast me like a pig, and they're like, open wide, we got to put the apple in, and I can't, it might
then
come in handy.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we can't roast her.
No, you know? That apple's crucial.
Just wouldn't be the same.
that apple that cannot serve a culinary purpose. I now I'm suddenly very interested in whether or not that is a real thing or if that was invented for cartoons because it looked interesting.
The apple in the mouth?
Yeah, because
if I think about it logically, rarely is that apple ever dehydrated as if it has been baked.
Right.
So maybe it's there to kind of cut down on the dark reality of staring down the burnt gullet of a pig.
Yes, I suppose that could be a factor.
Maybe people don't want to see the cooked teeth of an animal.
I never considered this, but this makes so much sense. Yikes.
Pork jowls are delicious, though, so I don't know if there is some seasoning or flavoring that would go on into the cheeks, but and the face, which is a very delicious part of the animal.
All right. Anyway.
If we eat animals, we got to talk about animals, you know.
Yeah.
It's true. All right,
that's part of it. Respect for the creatures we consume,
definitely.
But yeah, so today we will not be consuming anything, at least not together.
Nope.
Unfortunately, as James has shared on social media, I'm not telling tales out of school.
Mm-mm.
If you follow him at all, He got by the COVID. It finally happened to one of us. We made it a long time, but it has come to the extended universe of dead meat.
Oh no.
and partner properties.
The call is coming from inside the house for James Gressel.
Right. Yes, because I live above his garage. It was not safe for Beth and Mike to come over here. So we are recording at a distance once again, and we will once again be delaying a shared meal, but we will have it soon and we will do that. This May, we don't know. Hopefully everything continues as it has been trending for James, and he gets well soon. He's in good spirits today and feeling as good as can be given the circumstances. It may impact our season 5 recording. We don't know yet. So, stay tuned for any updates on that. Obviously he is a big component of that and we need him to be well to use his brain and voice.
Mm-hmm. That's always James. He had that vocal surgery back in like season 2.
Mm-hmm.
And now COVID.
Yeah.
Oh, he got married. That was in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's really thrown some wrenches in. How dare he?
Unbelievable.
How unprofessional of him to be living a life outside of our podcast. I kid.
But yes, we will. Hopefully he's better and everything will be fine. But it might not. We don't know.
Why'd you say
things are shifting?
That's so
yeah,
dark.
What do you mean?
What do you mean it might not? Is he going to die, dude?
No, he's obviously going to be fine.
Okay, thank you for the clarity for everybody.
He may be less fine longer than is convenient for my schedule.
Oh, my God. He's not going to make it to the next recording.
Yeah.
Like, oh, God.
It's like the doctor from Simpsons where he just like comes and gives him the most horrible news. Where he's like, oh.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Everything's fine, but we'll see. Prequel for now. Let's focus on that, what we can, the story that we can tell. And after last time is really, really heating up. I loved last episode. I was editing it and I was just like, this is just good. I hope you listeners enjoyed it as well. We're going to keep it going. Obviously, there's a lot of questions to be answered, I'm sure, for both you, Beth and Mike, and you, the listeners, as to what happens next. So I guess we'll just get into it without any further delay. Do you guys have anything before we go?
No. Let's do this.
Let's do it. Yeah, when last we left you off, you were betrayed by your new companion, Castian Valmoriel, who it turns out was working at the behest of some sort of tree creature. Bad boy tree.
Unreal.
I do love an evil tree.
Yeah, what's that say about you? What you got against nature, my guy?
I don't think it's that I have anything against nature. I think I just like trees and want them in all forms in the story, good and bad.
Hopefully,
they know so
a
much more
tree.
Than us. They have been around for so long. Their wisdom has turned into cynicism and therefore evil.
It's true. Real quick aside, I remember once at football practice in high school, my buddy and I were standing on the sidelines, and he just like looked over me and he was like, "Man, those trees over there, they're plants." I was like, "Yeah." And he was like, "They're just really big plants, man." I was like, did you get a concussion? He did, but not that day.
Oh, okay. Was it afterwards or was it before?
It was after the tree comment, I think.
Then he got a concussion.
I don't know. We all probably got concussions.
He was probably
it's a dangerous sport.
Looking into the future, you know?
Through probably the trees. Yes, there was an evil tree or evil entity that was inhabiting this tree, however it ends up shaking out, who seemed to be controlling Castian or in charge of him somehow. The tree revealed that Castian has been dead for a very long time, an indeterminate amount of time currently. And Nils speculated that he is one of the vampires that you worry has been in charge of this cult of the White Oak. The tree entity may be the White Oak itself. Katheria did determine that the tree was an oak tree, the actual tree itself, through some investigation. And then, you encountered this thing. It gave you very little information, but very important information, especially to Katheria. It was her that they were after, it seems, that Castian delivered the... There it is. There was the connection to the delivery meal.
Are you this for real?
Yeah.
Well, it's like an I Spy game.
It's right in front of our faces that whole time.
And yeah, he delivered you, Katheria, to it, and said that's the deal. Now you have to hold up your end of the bargain.
I'm not Vietnamese.
Now you are being held captive. You've had your weapons removed, but Jumbo is a hand free thanks to the bug juice.
Praise bug juice.
How? Yes. How he will use that, we don't know. Castian called Katheria princess. as the episode ended, says, "For what it's worth, Princess, I am sorry. We're going to get back into it now. The story is going to pick up moments later. You have been led out from the, other details that you learned. The snow and ice that has been falling over this, raging in the storm over this castle, you believe to be somehow connected to dragon bits, thanks to the broken hourglass that was confirmed to contain dragon scales. When it broke, those scales mixed with the snow and some ice formed over the broken object, leading you to suspect that there is a connection between those two things, potentially even that the snow itself might be dragon bits.
Can we make a dessert that is called dragon bits?
Yeah.
I don't know why, but when you said that, I was like, that sounds good.
It does sound kind of desserty. Like, yeah, yeah.
Let's have some dragon bits.
Oh, my God. You guys, is this lava round two? No, dragon bits doesn't sound delicious at all.
Yeah, it does. It's like caramely.
It totally could be. You could use dragon fruit.
Bits.
As like.
This whole time.
Yeah, like a shaved ice.
We're doing like blood and trees and vampire shit. And there's a dragon. And I'm guessing that it's being like torn asunder. And so the bits are like pieces of its skin. And you guys are like, sounds so tasty.
Oh, people nice, go to refreshing. Church and eat the body of Christ. It's like something similar. It's just with dragons.
Oh, okay. You're right.
There might be some transubstantiation going on. There's this. Now I am challenged.
Dragon bits.
Yeah.
It's going to be dragon fruit shaved ice, right?
I mean, that's what immediately jumped to mind for me. I think that sounds good. I like dragon fruit.
There's a guy on TikTok, by the way, who has discovered that you can freeze a bunch of stuff and then take that frozen bit to a zester. And just like shave stuff down. So he's been shaving down. First it started with ginger and then it moved to garlic. And now he's on like grapes and banana and peanut butter, like whatever he can, he'll shave into a little shaved ice, delicious thing. And I think that's what dragon bits should be.
There you go. One of the restaurants I worked in, frozen shaved ginger all the time.
I started doing that. Practice. Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Makes it a lot easier.
So much easier.
And it smells great.
Yes, it does.
Doesn't smell great where you guys are in the world.
Because of the dragon bits, I get it.
Because of the dragon bits. mostly because of the desiccated corpses that serve as your jailers.
Oh, right.
Yes. The cult members seem to be made up of two different kind of groups as you guys are led into the greater structure of this castle. You see that these ghouls, these skeletons, these corpses that are guarding you and animated by the evil branches make up one sect of the forces here in the castle. And as far as you are aware, living cult members make up the other. There are patrols you can see of the orcish type people that you encountered before, who are kind of the rank and file members, it seems. They are moving in groups around. As you pass along yet another courtyard, you can see that there's like a larger platoon of them gathered to do some sort of drills in this, maybe like a training yard that you're looking down on as you are led to the dungeon. All the while above you stretches the massive root system of the white oak itself. As you look up and you follow the path of these roots up into the bigger tree, now you are close enough and within the storm that, Katheria, you can also see this huge, huge shape of the dragon that looms over this castle. Seems frozen. In place. The storm rages and whips around. Visibility isn't great, but you've somewhat adjusted to it, and the increasing frequency of the lightning does make it so that you can see some things. You also notice in the root, in the actual, you know, bark of the tree, those strange gaps that you saw before when the face moved, the openings that open up into what appears to be a starry void, a space that reminds you of the moon room. The bark shifts and creaks, and these cracks open up, some stretching even feet wide, where you get like a really good look into space for all intents and purposes. And when these do, you see these very disturbing and almost otherworldly looking spider-like creatures scuttle across the surface of the wood and weave webs of a very like sickly gray color over these patches, seemingly trying to repair them. These spiders have long bent legs that seem too large for their bodies, and the way that they move across across the bark, hanging upside down or at strange angles, the gravity doesn't seem to apply to them, is just horrific. It's
gross.
It just, yes, it's an unsettling sight. Everything around you now, after this encounter, after your betrayal, I would imagine has you on edge. There's nothing now about this place, as awe-inspiring as it is, that doesn't make the hair on the back of your neck stand up. And I think that everyone is looking for something. You know, Navia is focused on these gaps, these openings. Her attention is drawn to them. Katheria, roll insight. See if you can kind of get a sense of what, why it is, or how she feels about it. Is that your roll, that 19?
Yeah, 16 plus 3, 19.
Oh, wow. She's looking at these openings. Every time one opens up, you know, like you turn a corner where you pass particularly close to, within maybe 4 feet, not close enough to touch, but close to some of the white oak than you have been, closer to some of the white oak than you have been. And one of these openings opens, and you notice that Navia steps back away from it. And it's not the spider, even though she has previously said how much she hates spiders. It was the opening that she reacted to.
Hmm.
She jumped back from the opening. The spider came over after, and she kind of settled back once it covered the opening up with its web. It was the opening that seemed to bother her. Nils, roll insight. See if you can see what your buddy is up to.
Nope, 6. Can't see anything.
Nils, I think you're distracted. I think that your mind is going a mile a minute of, you know, escape routes.
Yeah.
I think you're thinking, how are we going to get out of this?
Yes.
You know that Majumbo's got a hand free. Seemingly nobody else has noticed. He's been laying low and hasn't made any move yet. You've clocked how many guards you have. There are 6 of these corpses that are guarding you, and Castian in the back with Katheria. You're kept a little bit apart, not so much that you're going in different directions or anything, but there are corpses between you, the three of you, and Katheria and Castian, who are hanging a little bit further back.
Okay.
Katheria, you're being treated with a bit more respect.
Yeah, I was going to ask if I was tied up, because we didn't embark with me tied up.
You're not.
Okay.
You're not restrained the way that the others are, though you were made to give your staff to Castian. However, when he took it, it wasn't the forceful, you know, retching from your hands the way that it was for Nils and everybody else. It was more of a...
It's the kind of taking you would implement when dealing with a princess.
Yes. Yes. It was with respect, but a very, very much with the understanding of you've lost.
Right.
So, you know, go along with this and it might be, you know, more comfortable for you. You're walking through the hallways of the castle. You're snaking through a labyrinthine path. You've kind of lost sense of where you are in relation to where you came in relation to the church. It's unclear if they're taking you on a direct path or if they're purposefully trying to disorient you, but the sense, let's roll survival and
all of
see
us?
If you, yeah, and see if you guys can, I'll roll for the other guys too, and see if you guys can keep track of where you've been.
Maybe I rolled a two.
Don't worry.
Yeah, Nils is lost.
No idea. Where am I?
Where am I? What's other people doing? I don't know.
Nils is lost.
Well, maybe or
Majumbo, not much better with a six.
Two peas in a pod.
But the druids.
Yep.
Navia and Katheria have a better sense of where they are.
I got a 22. I want to have a conversation with Castian.
Okay.
I think the first thing she asks him after a very long silent treatment is, how did you know who I am?
It wasn't anything I did, truth be told. I wish I was that good, and maybe at one time I was, but it was Lord Orothos, actually, who first felt your presence here in this world through his roots.
Came here.
I don't know how you came to this world. I assume that your order came through one of the gates, but it's presumably been a very long time since they were used. In any case, he felt you first in the city. That's where he told me the direction to head in was in the direction of the city, but I came across you as you came out of the tunnels, and it saved me quite the journey, I will say. I wasn't looking forward to being so far from this prison that he's built for me.
Would that have weakened you to be far from it?
To be honest, I'm not sure. I try not to think too much about the things that he's made me do over these years. He just kind of trails off.
I'm curious, Castian. When you say years, how long has it been that he's kept you here?
I don't rightly know. With the storm, it's hard to tell day from night. And after 2 or 3 centuries, you kind of lose track.
Ooh, that hits. Who really were those people that we fought when we initially entered the castle grounds? You claimed that they were your previous companions, but that can't be true.
Well, that's the thing, Princess, is that nothing I've told you has necessarily been a lie. I was sent here by the council to put an end to the atrocities of Lord Orothos, and I came with a party of fellow hunters whose task was to infiltrate this castle and stop his reign before it got to where it is now. What I didn't tell you, or at least wasn't completely honest about, was we failed catastrophically. All of my companions were killed. As their bodies fell, they were impaled by these horrible vines, and I was so terrified by what I saw. The people I cared about had fought beside for decades turned against me that way. I just kept running until I found that church and what I thought was a route that could be destroyed, that was maybe the main branch. If I could somehow set it on fire and burn it to the ground to ashes, there'd be no more. But the closer I got, it seemed like the more powerful he became, until I felt its bite. And I know that you have some sense of what that feeling is like, and I've never been the same since.
Well, I suppose the difference between you and I is that I am no coward who would allow that to happen to me.
He kind of laughs and he says, there was a time I felt the same. If you think I haven't tried to resist this or find any other way out, the will of that evil is too powerful.
Katheria is starting to suspect that Plinthor and Beetlemore's guests may not be at this castle. And we came here for no fucking reason.
Hey everybody, Gressel here with a few quick announcements, and then we're going to get you right back to it. Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the prequel series. Be sure to follow us on social media at dndndpod on Twitter and dndndpod on Instagram, or email us at dndndpod@gmail.com. Haven't said this in a while, but be sure that you give us a rating on your podcast app of choice. Spotify now has ratings, I noticed recently. So if you are listening on Spotify, be sure to go ahead and give us a rating that you genuinely feel is appropriate. Although I hope it's a high rating. If you're listening this far in, I would think that you enjoy what we do. And it would be great to help other people know that we do something that you enjoy and give us a rating. So thank you to those of you who have, and thank you to those of you who will after hearing this. Check our Patreon, patreon.com/dndndpod, and Beth's podcast, Your Art Friends, and all the fun things that we do. Dead Meat, you guys know about Dead Meat. I think that's it for me, so thanks everybody, do what's fun. You walk in silence for a bit, twisting and turning. Nils makes another attempt at trying to figure out where you are and evidently was not successful.
Yeah.
per the game log in the survival world.
It's just a stray survival check in the middle of that conversation. Nils squeezing his eyes, rubbing. He can't rub.
Like,
he
trying to orient the sun or whatever. But like, that
oh,
white
yeah, I know star maps. Fuck, we're downstairs.
You have turned downstairs, you've gone down several levels of stairs, you've twisted through pathways.
It's how cold is it? Probably not that cold though, huh?
It's very strange. There's a you as you move around, you have this mix of cold and hot.
Got that root heat.
Root heat, yes, is the key. It's unlike anything you would expect from undead, because the corpses themselves are lifeless, but the roots that animate them pulse with the heat of some kind of life. Castian is now, you know, cold and lifeless, but, you know, as you pass by any of the roots on the walls, you feel that heat. The wind and the snow is incredibly cold, but there are these moments of just from the juxtaposition, it feels so much hotter, like a blast of fire every time you you walk by one. The spiders spit cold. They are
How would we know
thing.
That? Oh, they like
when you get close,
they
when you
themselves
get close
are emanating.
One,
I thought
they
were
are
spitting.
Emanating a cold. Yeah.
Okay.
They don't like spit cold magic. I guess like that. Yes.
Clarification. Thank you.
They are the coldest thing. And if you're investigating temperature,
icy beasts.
They are the coldest thing. And eventually you get to what seems to be a pretty standard dungeon. It's almost disappointing. this was the dungeon of the castle as it was originally built. So there isn't anything particularly odd about it. It is an underground room with no windows. It is stone. There are cells with metal bars. And you are led down a center row with cells on either side of it. You're led to a cell at the end that is a little bit bigger. And all of you are put in the same cell. And as you're shoved in, there are three other figures in this cell.
Wait, what?
How?
The first one you notice, Nils, is a very hulking, powerful figure. You know, it's hard to tell because the cell is a little bit short. The ceiling of the cell is probably only 6 feet tall. This creature has to definitely duck. Easy 7 feet, maybe bigger, but it's hard to tell. It's powerful, broad shoulders, muscled, and has a piggish snout and tusks.
It's a pigman.
It's a pigman.
He's a dinner guest. He's probably not.
Katheria is shocked. She just came to the conclusion that this has all been a ruse. It's not real. It's just been like a trap for her to come here. And suddenly, no, there's the guests may be here indeed.
The pigman is bruised, beaten up, but stands when you enter with a snort. This, if we're imagining this as a cartoon, there would be a visible, you know, air shoots out of his nose. And looms over you, Nils. Just like you are a wide person, you are a broad-shouldered man.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy easily eclipses you. Stands forward, his hands are bound in front of him.
Are our hands still bound?
You were unlocked when you were pushed in.
Oh, okay.
But his are still bound. And his feet are shackled together as well. His movement is very limited.
What are they bound with?
They're metal. Shackles, but there's also a like some sort of glow, maybe a magical glow or a luster of a gem, perhaps.
Okay,
that is running through these metal shackles. They kind of have a little bit of a well. Roll investigation,
Kressel.
Oh no!
I got a one then a negative because I have negative one. For investigation, I rolled a zero.
That's so bad. Nils, so get out of your own head.
Yeah. You're shoved into the into the cell by one of the ghouls, which causes you to bump into this huge pig creature. So you don't get a good look on the shackles as your face passes them quickly, and is smushed up against his piggy chest. smells very bad. Also, you have something slick on your face as you smush against his skin. It's a mix of sweat and blood. That maybe some partially dried blood. It's a little sticky. It's just not nice.
Great.
As you're pushed into this person.
Ugh.
The other figure.
You said there were three.
There are three. Yes. One of the other ones, the next one that you see is in the back in the shadows. Is tied to the actual wall. The hands and feet splayed out. These are definitely magic shackles. You can see that they have a glow about them. This is an older man, humanoid figure, a human or an elf, but right now you can't see who it is. His head is slunk down. Maybe he's unconscious or otherwise very, very tired. Or worn out. You can't see his face. You see, though, elf ears right now, just in this moment. And we'll get more in a minute. But the last figure, Katheria, you recognize.
Oh.
She's not as dignified as last you saw her. In fact, she's clearly been physically hurt, perhaps beaten or otherwise abused while in captivity. But this is the dragonborn woman that you saw in the moon room in your vision.
Oh.
In your bubble. And who gave you the morsel of food that made you have that strong memory experience. This is definitely her. Even though you were drunk at the time, you are suddenly immediately, like, you look up and you see this face and you recognize it. Like, this is that dragonborn person.
Does she see me?
She does. Yes.
Does she react?
Yes. She kind of smiles, like a half smile, and almost like a in almost pained. Like she winces a little bit and holds her side as she does. And that is the scene. What do you guys do?
Is Castian still there? And the guards who pushed us in there, are everybody still there? Or have we been left alone?
The ghouls leave. Castian lingers for a moment. He says, there's still some preparation to do.
Yeah, like more pillows, maybe? Or any more provisions?
Really use some pillows. You know, maybe a bed.
Yeah.
A straw is fine. I'm not expecting feathers.
Yeah, I mean, in Hosk, we treat our prisoners a little better than this.
very dignified. I've been in several Oscan jails, and they're just the best. You should really try it. And there's just no response to Majumbo's nonsense. But yeah, Castian, with that, just kind of gives you one last look, Katheria.
And that makes me mad.
He kind of lingers for a moment. You see, once again, just the immense sadness that he's had, that you've noticed for the last, you know, several hours. Just this real pain.
Man, I want to be mad at him. Katheria wants to be mad. But Katheria also sees that he is a victim. He is not an agent of his own life right now. But she wants to be so mad. So she just looks back.
Majumbo and Nils are, you know, maybe rubbing their wrists, doing that whole thing.
Yeah. I'm about to go introduce myself. So I go up to the big guy and say, hey, it looks like, you know, sorry for bumping into you. We've already met, but not met, but you know what I mean? And then I try to put my hand on his shoulder. And
you kind of have to reach almost. Yeah. And he tries to stand up to his full height, but he can't quite. Yeah. And you only have a couple inches of clearance. And he tries to kind of hold a hand out, but can't because of the shackles. So he kind of bows and he snorts and grunts in what you recognize to be a language. But you can't understand it.
Okay.
But it seems to be a greeting as best you can tell.
Okay. And then when my hand is on him, I use lay on hands and heal him for 11.
Oh, nice.
Because I noticed that he's bloody and a little bit injured.
Yeah, some of the color kind of comes back to his skin. As best you can tell, it's very dark. You know, your eyes are adjusting to the light, but most of the light in this room is coming from the glow of the magic shackles on the back wall holding the man up.
Hi, I'm Nils. Nice to meet you.
The Dragonborn woman speaks, and she says, hello, Nils. This is Both, the hunter. He doesn't speak the common tongue of your people, but I can tell that he's very appreciative of your kind gesture to heal.
Of course.
We're very grateful to have a healer. They took ours long ago.
Oh, well, hold on one second. I walk over and I guess she's also tied up. Like, she doesn't have a hand for you.
Yes, she's also bound, yes.
So I'll put my hand on her shoulder and heal for 11 as well.
And she's, oh, thank you. It's so nice to have some relief. We've been prisoner here for weeks now. And poor Plinthrin did everything he could, but they were able to get those shackles on him. And he's not much without his magic.
Plinthrin?
And you look over to the unconscious man being held up by the magic shackles. And now you do recognize the kind of graying hair and foppish good looks of Plinthrin Belamore. But he has been beat up pretty good. And these shackles are holding him up against the wall. He's unconscious and can't lift his head. So it's Majumbo who goes over and kind of picks his head up and he says, this is him, our host, our former host in the flesh. Without his finery, I didn't recognize him at first. It's
astonishing.
Oh no. I run over to him and do lay on hands for 13 to heal him up. Hopefully it'll help him. Does that help him?
It's enough to rouse him. He opens his eyes and he looks into yours, and he says, "Oh, Mr. Hasgendauer, I see you found my guests."
Yep, we did it. So can we go home now? Just kidding. What happened?
I don't suppose you have any means of getting me out of these shackles. They're preventing me from using any magic, and I'm quite useless, unfortunately, without my magic.
I don't know. I don't have any spells to do that.
Katheria is upset and confused and didn't think anybody knew her here. And to have discovered that, like, the moment that she touched down in these lands, she was set on a path to be given up as some kind of sacrifice based on her blood. So she's, like, not... Suddenly she's suspicious of everybody. And so she's looking at Plinthoran with a distrust that she didn't feel before, because he's the one who set her on this path in the first place. And so I'm trying to think, like, how the fuck she's going to handle this situation, because she's got a lot of anger inside. And that feeling's got to go somewhere. Before I even try to help you, how much did you know when we came here? Do you know who I am?
I guess that's a fair question. And he looks over to the Dragonborn woman and he says, Shay, I think we should probably lay it all out at this point. If we have any hope of getting out of this, we're going to need their help. And the woman says, I suppose you're right. It might be easier for me to explain. Do any of you have any food on you? That might be the easiest way to do it.
We have some bug juice. Do we have any remain? That's all.
I don't think we do. We threw away the crab meat.
I have rations, but I don't. Yeah, I've never used it.
Majumbo says all we have is these Ordobu rations. It's all we have left.
Do we still have the fish sticks?
No, the fish sticks, I think, are long gone. You would have eaten them
in the tunnels,
in the caves. So he hands her some of your just your regular, you know, trail rations, and she does something. It seems with great effort. It seems it takes her a lot of energy because she is bound by these shackles. They don't seem to be as strong as the ones holding Plinthoran, but they're still, you know, glow with this kind of like purplish energy when she tries to cast some magic on these rations. And you can see a little bit of what looks like snow comes off of her hands.
Oh.
Just a little bit. And it almost looks like it hurts her to do this. And it falls on the food. And she staggers. She's like, with these shackles, it's so hard to try to get any spell off, even one such as this.
Okay, what do I roll to figure out how to help her with the shackles? Because this is a woman who gave me a gift in the form of that
Arcana?
Boba. 18 plus 1, 19.
They're definitely magical, and it seems that this is an item that is beyond your understanding.
No.
There's no, like, break. There's no lock. There's no seam. They seem to be a complete circle around each of her wrists, and they're locked together. They're stuck together, and you can't tell how. There's not a chain or anything in between them. They're just stuck. One circle to the other, and they're glowing with this. There's a band in the center of this kind of purple energy that glowed brighter when she was trying to use whatever magic it was. You can't tell what school of magic it is or what kind of spell. It's bad. You get a bad, bad vibe from
that, like, purple magic. Question about the purple magic. Does it relate at all to the moon room opening imagery from the roots?
You get a similar kind of color palette. Like,
that's
and
what
the
I was
lightning
feeling.
Was purple. Like, there's different elements of your surroundings that this kind of echoes.
But we never figured out, like, an opposite element to that, did we?
Right. Yeah. You're kind of still piecing those things together. But she has enchanted this food. And she says, please trust me that we are trying to help you. We have been for a very long time. Before you knew what you are, if you do, before we knew you, who you are, even. We've been trying to help you. This may be the easiest way to explain. Both of you, all of you, please, just take a bite.
Katheria looks at Plinthoren.
She's telling the truth. For a long time, I've had suspicions about your family's involvement in my world and what it means. It's dangerous to have theories about something so important, and I could only trust certain people with this, and Shaesfrith is one of them. I know you don't have much reason to trust me, but please take the fact that we're both locked up as maybe we're both on the same side.
I'll take that, and then I eat the food.
And there's like a whoosh. Oh. And you are not in this room anymore.
Okay.
You are somewhere else. You are standing on top of a very, very high mountain. A very, very, very high mountain. It's incredibly cold. You can feel the wind blowing. And before you is this incredible temple. Unlike anything you have ever seen in your life. Like, mountaintop temples are not uncommon for you with where you're from, being in a mountainous region. But this is something almost beyond comprehension. The architecture is incredible. The scale of it is magnificent. You're standing in front of this massive gargantuan opening. What creature this could be built for, you don't even have time for your brain to comprehend.
Mm-hmm.
But walking around it are dragonborn, and they all have, some are more dragon than not, and some are more humanoid than not. Some walk on four legs and are just smaller. Some walk on two, and have robes and things. But it's just this population of dragon folk going about what seems to be normal kind of activity here. It seems ecclesiastical. It's very solemn, religious vibes. And as you move, you're kind of compelled to move a little bit. You feel like you need to step forward.
Okay.
And you see that you're kind of mirroring the movements of another, like almost like there's a ghost over you. Like you're doing a time trial in Mario Kart and you're following your own.
Yeah.
And you walk up to somebody and it's the woman from the cell who Plinthoren called Shaesfrith. And you hear Plinthoren's voice.
Your Excellency, I have a theory I think I need to talk to you about, but we can't do it here. Is there somewhere that we can talk in private?
And then there's like another whoosh. And Katheria, you see that after Nils eats this food, it's like what happened to you when you were in your memory. Like he's still physically there, but he is not. He is, you know, now in this kind of catatonic-y space, you know, in this trance that was caused by the food. When Jumbo says, "Oh well, if he's having something, I'm going to have some," and he grabs some and he does the same thing. Nils, you feel another presence, but you can't see Majumbo.
Okay.
Navia looks at you, Katheria, and says, "Kat, this is all a lot. I guess it seems almost stupid to ask, but are you doing okay? Like, it's got to be your worst nightmare."
"It is."
"Do you think we can trust these people? I don't.
And
I don't know if I can do magic. I don't know. They took our weapons."
I think Kat looks at the Dragonborn, whose name was said.
Yes, Shaesfrith.
Shaesfrith.
Shay, she was called.
And reads in her face that there's kindness there. There's compassion there. I don't think she has to roll to understand that she does not want to harm us. And so I think she just sits down next to Nils, picks up a piece of the ration and hands the other ration to Navia silently.
And I think silently she eats it.
And we eat it together.
And there's a whoosh, and you are in this memory as well. This memory that is evidently of Plinthoren's. Now you're walking into, looks like a study of some kind. It's an office-like room. There's a big desk. There's shelves lining the walls full of scrolls, very old tomes. Runestones, large, huge runestones fill the room. It's almost like a museum. And it's open air. It's open to this cliffside, this mountainside view. There's snow billowing. It's still cold. And you see Shaysfrith, or the image of her in this memory, wave a hand and light a fire that you know, or the avatar you're inhabiting, walk over and warm yourself by. And you hear yourself say, "Thank you." Shaysfrith says,
"Say what it is you have to say. You know how sensitive this subject is."
And you hear yourself say,
"If I'm right, then we may have been doing something horrible for centuries. I worry that the council has been led astray. The Earthadar heir doesn't need to be sacrificed. But we've led dozens to that place for that ceremony. Are you sure that it's the writings have all been lost or destroyed by time or by evil? I wouldn't ask this if it wasn't the only way I could think to verify it, but do you have any way of contacting your patron?"
She reacts like aghast.
"You know, they were lost. In the war, it was... How could you even ask me that? We haven't been able to access the full range of our abilities for generations because of their sacrifice. I think we need to go into the lands of Orlthos and investigate what really happened there."
And then everything kind of fades and fizzles away. And it goes back to the cell.
Kat's got tears streaming down her face.
And Blundherin says, I don't know what fate brought us together, but for some time I've been investigating your family, Katheria, and what their role is here. And we, for so long in this world, have believed that a sacrifice of some kind was necessary to keep the fabric of the universe together. The very essence of what our worlds rely on to exist. Something never felt right about that for me. There are accounts of what your ancestor was, who he was, what he did, what he was asked to do, why he did it. It just, that didn't add up for me with what we know of the man and subsequent, you know, subsequent members of your family. It just didn't seem right. And I, if there was any way to save these lives, it was something I wanted to look into. But the only way we could know the truth was to, I think, be there. And it's for that I sought out Shaysfrith and her people, the Chronomancers, to try to maybe go back and see what really happened. But to do that, we needed the power of the dominant dragon of time, who fell centuries and centuries ago fighting a great evil called Yanarinthaneus Argaranthium. It was said that, you know, this was the spot where that dragon was last seen, and these lands were cursed, and it's been so long since anybody's been here, and centuries ago a elite team was sent in to deal with it, and they were never heard from again, and the council, you know, lost their appetite for any kind of connection to that war. They just wanted to move on, and I was dealing with bureaucracy, and it was something we had to deal with in secret. And I assembled a secret meeting with the remaining Chronomancers and some other loyal folk. And unfortunately, we were found out. And that's when you all showed up. And I thought, you know, maybe we could get to the bottom of this together, and you know, I could investigate things on my side and maybe help you help them. But I was taken along with Shaysfrith and Both here, her loyal bodyguard. And while all of my co-conspirators have been brought before Lord Orlthos, and I just fear that they've been turned into them. And he indicates the guards that are at the head of the hallway of dungeon of cells here. The root animated corpses. This is probably a lot for you to deal with. And poor Nils and Majumbo, you really have nothing to do with this. This is just bad timing, I suppose.
Or good timing. Depends on the way you look at it.
That was the first positive thing that's been said, like, in this dungeon. Out of Nils's mouth. And it comes out of Nils's mouth. And this whole time, it's just building up inside of Katheria. And just that, like, maybe this is a good thing, actually, I think relieves a bit of that tension in a way that surprises her. Katheria looks at Beetlemore, and she tells him, I had an older sister. And I never had the chance to know her. I didn't know that she existed until my mother told me about her on my 16th birthday. What is happening to my family is wrong. What is supposed to happen to me is wrong. I don't need history to tell me that. I don't need to put together myths and legacies to understand that to be true. It's wrong. And if there is anything that I can do right here and now to correct that, to work together with you to change that for my future, for my children's future, and for the future of both of our worlds, everything else doesn't matter.
Well, there's nothing more I would like to do than try to help you, but I just don't know. I don't know how we're going to get out of this one. And then Majumbo says, maybe we could try using this. And he holds up Castian's flower.
Oh, this whole time, Gressel, you said that we got into the cell and everybody's hands got untied, and I was like, oh damn, Majumbo didn't have the chance to use his free hand for nothing.
Yeah.
What a missed opportunity. And then you just said that. Yeah?
I didn't know where that was gonna come into play. The hand. The free hand.
The free hand. The ballad of the bug juice, dude.
the bug juice. The most important bar you ever walked in.
Yes, it is. Yes, it was.
And everybody kind of the three fey people all react. Like, oh my god. My chum was like, yes, when they shoved us all in, I was able to sneak this away. I have a little bit of thieving skills in my background. You know, it's not a part of my life I like to talk about a lot, but, you know, it's come in handy from time to time.
You're a sly dog. I didn't know what you were going to do with it. I didn't have a plan, but you certainly did.
Yes, but here is where the plan ends. I don't know what to do with it. I've seen him make it into fire.
We don't want to burn everybody.
I rolled a nat 20 on Arcana.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my God. He holds up this flower. I look at it, and I scan it like a machine.
I'm going to get some more coffee while I figure out that nat 20.
Oh, no.
You look at the flower, Katheria, with a intense focus, a renewed...
With all those feelings. You know,
sense of purpose, yes. All the feelings just in like, well, if this is your only way out, you're damn well going to figure out how to use this to get out if this is your best chance. You see that... the flower is not like any flower you have ever seen before. It's almost as if it's made of energy. It's as you get a closer look at it, it has a weight to it that you wouldn't expect, but at the same time is light. It has a kind of internal heat to it. It has a warmth that it gives off. It has a kind of faint glow. It glows a little bit brighter when you take it from Majumbo to investigate it further. The petals have a movement to them, not completely dissimilar from the movement of in the bark of the white oak, where it's just kind of swirling. And you feel that there's definitely a power to this, a real, real power. You can feel all kinds of different magical energies within. It has the same kind of transformative feel that you recognize, feels the way that your wild shape shifting magic feels. It has the same evocative energies that you use when you call forth something like a guiding bolt. It has a real power and weight, but at the same time feels incredibly fragile, like the slightest thing could overload it.
I want to show it to Beetlemore.
Beetlemore. You're putting a T in there. Just want to make sure we don't...
Beetlemore. I want to show it to Beetlemore and put our heads together as to how to use it to free him and the dragonborn woman from their magical shackles. That's my goal. That's what I want.
Okay.
But my very good roll did not tell me, oh, it's a magic key.
It's not a key, although perhaps it could be.
Yeah, that's what I do. I'm going to ask him, like, where does this come from?
There's a noble family of some renown that comes from the south. They were a mid-major house, I suppose you could say, that was caught kind of on the middle of the war. I keep forgetting. It was so long ago, there wouldn't be anybody in your world who would have living memory of it, but there was a great evil that tried to take over the realms. It was partially your ancestor who helped to bring that conflict to an end, but some in this world were aligned with what he believed and what he wanted. This house was split, the Valmoriels. They had distant family relations to the Argaranthiums, and you know, some claimed to be descendants and have claims to some of their lands and some of their titles, and it was an ugly thing. But the good ones stayed on the right side and became some of the most fervent supporters of the council, almost as a way to overcompensate. I always felt it was a little bit too much, you know, don't protest too much kind of thing.
Okay.
They were known for their fabulous gardens, would imbue a lot of themselves into what they grew. A lot of that would be focused in these flowers that they would carry with them when they left their lands, as a way of reminding them of where they came from and the power that their house possessed.
Then if this came from Castian, and he has been under the influence of the magics here for so long, of the magics of the White Oak, it would stand to reason that perhaps this would be imbued with some of that power itself.
It's possible. It's. I've never seen one of these that's this old. That's you know, that's been through so much. If it has grown and absorbed, yeah, like you said, this. I just don't know how to get it out.
How do I? I feel like here's my logic. I feel like there's resonant magics in the purple lightning goopy bad shit, and in this flower that I am suggesting that perhaps contains both light and darkness. I want to be able to like utilize the side of the dark magic to affect the dark magic and commune with the dark magic and make it go away. But I usually play rogues, so I don't know. I don't know cantrips. So do I just hit this thing against the... whack? I whack the flower against the handcuffs? Is that what we're all waiting for me to just do?
Just do
There's,
it.
There's a shower of sparks, as though you hit a red-hot item with a hammer and a smith. And everybody reacts as though maybe that did it. But it didn't.
Of course it didn't.
And Plinthorn says, well, that was a good try. And I think you are on to something that's... In my research, I think part of what makes your family so special is a connection between, you know, all these different worlds and something in your lineage that brings everything together. But I don't know if you, as a second child, that doesn't seem to be the way the magic is strongest, but if we had some other kind of conduit or some other kind of focus that focused powerful... These unpredictable magics of this place.
Oh,
maybe we could harness it.
I turned to Nils.
Well,
do you have an idea?
Navia is kind of uncontrollable with her magic.
We turn maybe... to Navia.
hold hands.
And she's kind of been slinking back away. You see her arms are folded. She has her back kind of to you, and she says, I've been kind of putting the pieces together myself. I wasn't sure about all of it until Plinther in here was talking about all of the connections and the unpredictability and the overlap and all these things in this place. And I saw the tears and in the wood and that place, that strange moon place that we were before, and I think that's why I've been having these headaches. I think that's why I've been feeling this way, and why my magic's been so affected. I don't think it's me. I think it's wherever that place is, whatever we're looking into when those openings happen in that tree, wherever we were in that moon room. It's, I think that's where magic comes from. I have a sensitivity to it, and. If I can focus hard enough, I might be able to channel it through this flower and maybe focus really hard and use all of that energy in a more specific way and not so wild. I think I can do it, but I just need your help, Kat. Will you help me? And this could go really wrong, and I might kill us all.
We're dead if you don't try.
Then let's try. And she comes over and she grabs the flower in your hand and she holds your hand. She holds it very gently, very care, with a lot of care. And she looks up at you and she says, one more experiment, hey?
I smile.
She kind of pulls on your hand. There's a moment where the two of you are kind of stepping towards Plinthorin, where you're just holding hands and you have... a kind of image that comes to your head, a memory. You don't know why. You don't know if it's residual magic from the memory magic that Chasefrith had, or you don't know if this is just real. There's conflicting feelings all around you, but you have this memory that comes to mind as you step apart and you're holding hands and you're, you know, almost leaping towards this chance to make this work of you guys just running, you know, together through fields and moonshadow and you know, just you know, before times. Mm. And you're in this moment as she smashes your hands together with the flower into one of the binders, and there's an eruption of energy. And you all feel this. You feel this just huge burst of power. And you are suddenly somewhere completely different. You're in a, like, underground, like, gross...
It's not different at all.
...cave, almost. Like, instead of being in a dungeon, you're in this... It's earthen now, but it's overgrown, and it's covered in webs and vines and dead decay... is all over the ground. there's a thick kind of fog in the air that is almost noxious. All of you experience this. And then there's a flash and you're in your world. You recognize that you're in your world. You feel you're in like it's a castle basement. It's like storage. Like everything is normal suddenly. Like there's like crates and like you even see workers. Like you see like servants like getting stuff out of the basement. Like a guy like hoists a bag of grain over his shoulder and just walks right up as if nothing else is going on. And then you're slammed back into the Feywild and this eruption of energy, and it shorts the handcuffs and they open and fall to the ground. And Navia kind of collapses back into your arms, Katheria. She's completely worn out, but seemingly alive and unhurt.
Navia, you did it. She did it.
She did it.
I'm going to be honest. I thought that was going to kill us. I really did.
I didn't. And I hug her.
You're free. All of you are free, except the flash brought the attention of the guards who are now coming over to you and notice that the shackles are off of all of the other prisoners, but it's blasted by a magical firebolt that Plinthorin gets off before the rest of you have to roll initiative. D&D is a Moorpark Media podcast and a Spotify preferred partner. Written and edited by me, James Gressel. D&D is performed by James A. Janisse, Chelsea Rebecca, Beth Bradloff, and Mike Sagan.